we can.
Well, the best way for LSU to get it over is to knock off Arkansas this weekend. Welcome back in the zone, hour two on this Tuesday. We appreciate you tuning in. Justin Akre, Pat Bradley, Matty T. Tonight we have Turkey Bowl.
Turkey.
At Professor Bowl West. I hope you will join us if you can. It's going to be fun. Talk about the Arkansas matchup with LSU this weekend. Coming up in just a minute, Jim Harris is joining us on the Stiggy's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack Hotline. We'll get to him in mere moments. AB wants to talk about Ira Hayes. AB.
Hey.
What's up?
I was just going to let you – I don't know why Matty T didn't tell you that. He knows it. But he's one of the six guys that raised the flag in that famous photograph of raising the flag on Iwo Jima.
Yes, he told me that earlier.
Off the air.
Oh, okay.
I had not heard the song prior to today. I don't know how that one escaped me. I'm a little surprised and disappointed that I'd not heard the song prior to this morning.
Yeah, and they, of course, all six of them, I think, dropped into anonymity and was never heard of again, hardly. But anyway.
Not until today, my friend. Not until today.
He was pretty famous for, I think, becoming an alcoholic after that.
Mm.
But well, anyway,
actually,
sad,
he wasn't famous for that until now.
Yeah.
Sad story for a war hero.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
Thank you for the info. I appreciate it. Depressing, sad. Jim Harris joining us on the Stiggy's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack Hotline from SportingLifeArkansas.com. Jim?
Was Ira Hayes, is he the Native American? Is that
correct?
I missed the show.
Yes, sir.
But I saw Flags of Our Fathers. That was a good movie.
Clint Eastwood joint.
You know, I have on disc, and my wife is still irritated me that I haven't seen it yet. I have on DVD the, what was the Tom Hanks production that they did for HBO?
Brothers.
Band of Brothers.
I tried to watch it, and I'm like, okay, this is really good. And then I sort of lost track of it and never got back to it, and I feel like a jerk, but she bought it for me. I need to take that
over
with me.
HBO has got it back on demand.
Yeah, well, I've got it on DVD, too. I guess I could just, whatever.
Well, you've got all the extras, and, of course, the main guy, the actual real-life guy that, the dude from Homeland, Damian Lewis, plays, he passed away, I think, earlier this year. Forget his full name offhand.
Okay. I'm not familiar.
In fact, I was really lucky to be at the D-Day or at the World War II Museum in New Orleans, which started out as the D-Day Museum because that's where the Higgins boats were built.
Yep.
On the weekend of the 70th anniversary? Gosh, 70th anniversary of D-Day was this past June 6th, and they had a lot of great things
going on. Oh, yeah, that's
cool.
Well, cool. Yeah, I was telling people earlier, Jim, there's a list we're going to go through of the top 10 war museums in the United States, and I've been to the one in New Orleans three times now, I think. So it is a great facility for those who have not been. So on a much lighter note, much less important, now let's talk some college football, shall we? Arkansas taking on a team that is from down the road from New Orleans.
Yeah. Speaking of that, or up the road or up the river. A little up the river. It's up the river.
I'd like to send them up Crab Creek after this weekend, but
we'll
see.
You'd like to send them up the river in a snowmobile, maybe?
Yeah. Are you going to go this weekend?
Depends on the weather.
Okay. See, that sounds like a lot of people. That's probably normal. What do you think the crowd is going to be if it's – let's say it doesn't snow. Let's say it's 37 and raining. What do you think the crowd is? 50, 60, 70? Do they get 70?
I don't think it can be 37 and raining. I think for sure it's going to be in the 20s.
20s?
I trust my Todd Yacobian and Tom Brannan and
There's only one meteorologist in Matty T's life.
Well, I know, but I mean, I read all the Twitters and Sarah Fortner and everybody else, and everybody seems to be. I'm sorry, I don't know the Channel 4 or the Channel 16 people.
That's all right, we get it.
No need to apologize.
But I can see
Greg D. I like him. Anyway,
I can see the Arctic front coming. But let's just say they do miss the forecast. It's 37 and raining. They'll have over 60,000.
Bill Belichick says they don't know what they're talking about anyway.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what. I hope it's somehow or another a total change and it's good weather. But it sounds like it's going to be the kind of day that LSU really doesn't want to be at following up a game that they gave away, basically.
Yeah, they basically did, I guess. I was talking to Pat about this yesterday.
Well, Alabama won it. I mean, give credit to Alabama.
Okay, we will in a minute, but right now let's just talk about how LSU blew it. When they fumbled the ball, when Yeldon had his leg twisted up and he coughed the ball up deep in LSU territory, was there any doubt in your mind, because there was none in mine, that they would end up settling for a field goal?
I did expect field goal. I thought they would probably just set up for a field goal. Can you tell me how they I was actually watching that from the parking lot of the TCU, of Eamon Carter Stadium, and TCU and Kansas State had ended before, and we were walking back to the car. How did they end up back on the 16 or something, or the 20? How did it end up being like a 30-something yard field goal when they were on the 6 or the 4 or whatever it was?
There was a personal foul.
Really?
No,
I'm not laughing at you. I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
No, I mean, there was...
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like that little bit of...
But, I mean, there was no question in my mind they would not find a way to punch in the end zone and virtually
end the game. Oh, no. I thought they'd just probably run the ball 3 times and put it in the middle of the field and kick the field goal. Listen, though, I mean, if the guy – it's not all on the kickoff, man, but his kickoff going out of bounds, the clock doesn't run a single second, and Alabama starts on the 35 as opposed to a kick return to the 35 – probably 10 seconds run off the clock at least. Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely knocks them down to 40. And then the other thing that was surprising to me is how ballyhooed LSU's pass defense is. And, of course, they go into prevent victory mode and take much deeper drops. But that's the one thing about Chavis, but it is sound fundamentally. I mean, you play the percentages, but he will go into a prevent defense that you can throw underneath and get the ball down the field. It's happened many a time. I mean, it happened at Tennessee. So, I mean, it's he can take guys who probably could have manned up every one of those Alabama receivers and take them off 10 or 12 yards. And
well, everyone but Amari Cooper maybe, yeah.
And then, they could man him up. I think they have a guy on their defense that did a pretty good job and can man him up. But anyway, that beside the point, yeah, I expected the field goal. I still think it was a heck of an Alabama effort to tie the thing up. Kudos to them. Don't you love that word?
Kudos. I love Cutus. Rashard Robinson apparently is not going to play again. He started 6 of LSU's first 9 games. Speaking of defensive backs, and Les Miles said that he is not going to be back in the short term. That's the quote, in the short term. His suspension could result in a shift, according to this report I read on CBSSports.com, of junior safety Jalen Mills to corner. And Jalen Mills, all he did was earn All-America honors as a freshman. Well, freshman All-America honors in 2012. So I'm going to guess he probably will be just fine over there.
Yeah, they'll be okay. I mean, I guess they promote somebody to safety.
I assume.
I think the key,
I prefer that they play with 10. That makes it fair.
I think the key personnel thing for this game this week is the health effect with the middle linebacker piece. You know, I think he went out of the game the other day. If he's able to go, I don't think he'll be full speed. In fact, I think they're pretty banged up as it is. And I think that position alone will dictate if Arkansas can really get something in the running game, kind of like they did in Little Rock in 2010. If you remember how well Arkansas ran the ball that day, I think there'll be a chance for Arkansas to do what its strength is early.
Arkansas
tends to take things backward from Bobby Petrino. I mean, we may have mentioned this before about Jim Chaney, but Bobby Petrino's style was to pass for points and run to win. Basically, threw in the first half, got the lead, and the second half was to run the ball. It kind of backfired a little bit on him against Florida State, as you know. It seems like Arkansas wants to run the ball in the first half, and then they end up, for whatever reason, probably because they're trailing, but, they throw the football. It's kind of the opposite.
Right, that's true.
It's the kind of throwing to win.
That's right. Yeah, it'd be nice if they had
and they're not winning.
Well, here's the thing. You can't – Brandon Allen throwing the ball 40 times is not a winning formula for Arkansas. I don't think it's a winning formula, even if they had a quarterback that people would consider to be at the upper echelon of the SEC, which most people don't consider Brandon Allen to be. So I'm going to guess that if Brett Bielema had his way, they wouldn't have to throw it 40 times for any reason whatsoever. I did want to look at some of the numbers, Jim, some of the numbers from year to year after nine games. And there are some significant strides Arkansas has made on both sides of the football. To the guy who's gotten a lot of love this week, from former players, like we talked to Lloyd Phillips yesterday, from, you know, guys who I respect, is Rob Smith and the job that he's done, taking basically the same set of guys and showing the amount of improvement that they have shown on the defensive side of things. Total defense has gone from 413 yards a game, ninth in the SEC, 76th in the FBS, to seventh in the SEC, almost 60 yards worth of improvement. More importantly, they moved from 76th in the FBS to 42nd. Scoring defense, they have gone from 88th to 48th in the FBS. Turnovers lost, Arkansas has done a much better job in that regard, 79th to 45th. Team pass efficiency, say what you want about the passing game, but from a team pass efficiency standpoint, Arkansas has gone from 109 to 58. Scoring offense, 105 to 23. It's been the biggest stride, 15 points a game.
Over well, that's the biggest stat.
Yeah.
I mean, you can throw any of those other stats out there, but I think two stats that matter or points allowed and red zone defense. And I think Mississippi State's pretty good in both of those.
Yeah.
Actually, it's been, and Auburn.
Most of the SEC West is probably pretty good at all those.
I think Auburn was number one last year in red zone defense. So, I mean, there's something to be, and I think Arkansas's done a decent job in red zone defense. They held them.
They're in the middle of the pack of the SEC, fifth in the SEC, yeah.
I mean, you know, that's a livable, that's a winnable. That certainly something you like. I mean, Rob Smith, he was, if Arkansas was 7-2 and not 4-5, it might look like home cooking, but I think that Rob Smith ought to be in line for at least to be a finalist for the Broyles Award. But I think that because they're 4-5, he won't get that kind of recognition. The guys who usually are here for the Broyles Award, they're teams are generally in the top 10, if not playing for the national championship. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have four teams playing, I guess, when the Bulls Award is presented. So I think it's still given in December, is it not?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't even know what the date is. But
it is. We just looked at it today. It's December 9th, I think, this year.
Yeah, I think it moves around a little bit. But if Arkansas was 7-2, and he's not the reason they're not 7-2. I mean, if they're not 7-2 based on their defense, I think there's just been some offensive inefficiencies, some undisciplined-like play and, performance on that side of the football. It's probably kept Arkansas from being 7-2 instead of 4-5.
I can't argue that. So what do you think about the matchup here? Anything you like about the matchup with LSU?
I don't like a lot of the matchup. Again, if Beckwith is not in the ball game at middle linebacker, they will just be hurting big time up the middle. He's been incredible. When that move was made after the Auburn game, it really kind of made them pretty formidable. You couldn't run up the middle like Auburn. Auburn just tore them apart. And then they made a couple of changes. Supposed to play a true freshman defensive tackle that. I mean, you got to play your best players, even if they're raw. And that's what they did. But I think Beckwith being in the middle was the difference. And if he's banged up or hurting, I think Arkansas's got a great chance to lean on its strength. And if Arkansas can lean on its strength and play field position with this defense the way you just cited all those stats, keep everybody in front of them, because LSU will have probably as much speed as anybody they've played. Offensively and defensively, but offensively against our defense, the Razorbacks defense. Keep everybody in front of them, play the field position, and make Jennings have to, drive the football over a number of plays. I think the edge is with Arkansas, plus being in Fayetteville, plus the weather, temperature, getting LSU right after this Alabama heartbreak. I mean, think about Arkansas trying to bounce back a week after that A&M game they let get away. Would have been really tough. I just think I can't think of an advantage other than raw talent among the 85 players on the roster that isn't in Arkansas's favor in this. And I would be, if I was looking at it totally as a fan, I would be pretty disappointed if Arkansas doesn't win their first SEC game in 2 years this Saturday.
Hmm. Okay. I like the confidence. I don't know. I don't share the optimism. I can't tell you why. But I hope that you're right. I don't really have any reason to not be. But
I do know that Arkansas, and I've asked you this and we've talked about this a few times, I don't think Arkansas has a guy at quarterback that will win the game for them. But they have other players on the field that can win this game for them if they lean on them and stop making the undisciplined mistakes on offense. If there's still I don't know, there'd probably be something that we hadn't seen this year. I mean, we've seen everything from two fumbled snaps in a game, you know, underthrowing the fade route at Mississippi State, a tripping penalty that wiped out a touch. I mean, you know, you can look at all, you know, missed extra points, inability to kick a field goal. You can go down the list of reasons why they've lost games this year, and we probably haven't seen the newest one yet, you know, that would probably cost them this weekend. But I'm going to sit here and say that I think they've pretty well run out of reasons to find ways to lose, and that they need to win. Huh. But
assuming they learn from their mistakes, yes, you're right. They have probably run out of ways to lose.
I mean, let's face it. We were talking about TV last night talking about Mallett, and think about Arkansas beating LSU here, and Mallett checking into, you know, a 4th-and-3 play where Joe Adams, makes a double move, and they get a key touchdown on 4th-and-3. I don't even think Arkansas could check into a play like that with this setup they've got now.
I'm sure Joe Adams is not on
roster,
so that's
Joe
for sure.
Adams isn't on the roster, Ryan Mallett's not on the roster, and Bobby Petrino isn't calling the play.
That is true.
So all three of those things aren't there for some of the things that I'd like to think Arkansas might possess. If the game were tied, say in the fourth quarter, 20-20 or something, and Arkansas needed a play like that, I mean, you know, Arkansas's probably going to run over left tackle and get stopped. I mean, I'm sorry. That's just what I started.
If history holds, no, that's what you're used to. And Chaney gave himself a jockstrap of sorts the other day and said he's going to have to be more creative in his play calling. Yeah, like I said last week, look, that's who they want to be. They want to be a team that can line up on 3rd-and-2 or 4th-and-1 and get it. They're not there. For whatever reason, they're not there. And so it's tough, and you're going to have to get creative and admit, this is who I am. I don't want to be this right now, but that's who I am. So
that's all fine and dandy, Justin, but why are they running halfback passes with a guy who's had 4 snaps all year, and he's going to throw back to Brandon Allen? I mean, that kind of creativity leaves me scratching my head.
I agree. I'll tell you what I did like. They mixed in a couple of times, is the Wildcat with Duop.
Hmm. I mean, I think that's fine, and I like seeing him in the Wildcat. But here's a guy who they've already said can't throw the ball, and they run that same.
I can hear the collective fan base going that he should fit right in. I know. I can hear you.
No, I mean to run a throwback to a quarterback you don't want to be hit.
All right.
And then the tight end reverse stuff to a guy who he may run a 4.7. You know.
No, that's a dumb play. I agree. What do you think about Marshall? How much will he be utilized? I mean, at minimum, he makes your kick return game 100% more dynamic.
The kick return game just improved to big-time levels with him. Although, I mean, I'd be stunned if they ever ran one back against LSU. Now, will LSU run one back against Arkansas is your question, I guess. His speed – is going to be, you know, such a critical factor to have on the field.
What do you think about the Mississippi State-Alabama game before we take a couple calls here?
I think that Alabama, if they could throw the ball consistently, would probably coast in this game. Being Mississippi State's weakness would be the pass defense. But I think it's going to be another I think it's going to be decided closely again, 17-13, one way or the other, probably.
Okay. All right. I'm on the record. I think Alabama wins by double digits. I hope Mississippi State kills them.
Yeah. I see Alabama as SEC's representative to the Final Four, and they'll be the only one.
Who else? If you had to guess right now, who else gets in?
Alabama, Oregon, Florida State, and I guess your wild card. I'd love to see TCU get in. I don't think they can play with Alabama. I really don't.
I
saw them in person.
Oh, wow.
So I think Alabama would stuff them. I do think that against any of these other three teams, they can. But I think Alabama's biggest question and problem is the efficiency at quarterback. Although he won the ball game for him, I just don't think he's probably the difference in maybe holding them back. But on the other hand, he's kind of a guy that can make some plays that maybe a McCarron or somebody couldn't.
What did you see by TCU that you say they can't match up against Alabama?
Size and overall speed. I saw Kansas State with a little bit more speed in places that TCU doesn't have. TCU just doesn't recruit or have the type of athletes that FSU and Alabama have. And I think it would be really, really obvious if you saw them on the field together. I think they're incredibly well coached, and I think Boykin has gone from being a redshirt freshman. I've been at two Kansas State TCU games over a two-year period. I saw Boykin as a redshirt freshman in place of Casey Paul-Hall look, you know, out of place, mm-hmm. not ready to play. And now I saw him as a guy they ought to at least consider to bring to New York as a Heisman candidate just for what he means to that team. But I also, we sit here and we cry about Arkansas giving up a big play on pass defense. I mean, as they did against Mississippi State. Well, so did TCU. I mean, they had a really bad gaffe and gave up like a 70-yard play. I just don't think a team that's going to win the national championship is going to be a team that probably gave up a, 70-yard plays like that. And they've given up a few. I'm looking at it man-to-man talent. And I think that the two teams with the most talent of the teams we just talked about mm-hmm. are Alabama and Florida State.
I don't have a problem with that. I do think it'd be interesting to see them match up. Because, I mean, I've seen enough out of Alabama to know that they can, on a bad day, be beaten by just about anybody who's pretty good. TCU would certainly fall into that category.
I think if the turnovers go well for them, and again, they're well coached, and TCU's lines outplayed Kansas State line. I mean, they won the trench battle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, I saw a really good game and a team that was really ready to roll.
Yeah, I'd love to see them do some damage and get in there. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, just want to follow you on Twitter. I read you first on analysis of the games. I've heard you speak a couple of times. I call in once a year to ask you a question, and so I've been waiting to catch you on the show. But last year I called in and I asked, what was your beef with the coaching staff and with Chaney in particular? So my question again this year is, what's the deal with you and Chaney? Are you okay with Bielema? But you're not okay with Chaney? That's my first question. And second question is, if we go 0-8, does Chaney keep his job?
I don't think the program can afford to keep making coordinator changes year after year. And I think Chaney, I don't know what his contract is specifically, but he came here pretty much on a long, I thought it was a long-term assurance from Bielema. Bielema got a six-year contract. That's how long it would take to turn the thing around to what he wants, and Chaney would be here for good. Now, I want to redirect you to a Sporting Life Arkansas column I wrote 2 or 3 weeks ago that I defend Chaney overall. My problem is only my head scratching at a few play calls, but play calling itself is overrated in terms of the difference. I think it's talent more than anything. And I do think they try to get creative in sometimes odd ways, be it fake punts or anything that sometimes works, sometimes don't. But I think they do things now to try to
even up the difference that they think there is with their opposition right now. And I mean, I don't have a beef with Chaney overall as the offensive coordinator, but I am concerned. I'll just say that now I am concerned and have been about the what I perceive as more of a lack of discipline on that side of the football compared to the good discipline I see on the defensive side. I think that's all. I mean, that's where I see it mostly. Just.
Jason, you got something for Jim?
Yeah, I had a question. As far as the kind of goes right with what you're talking about, do you think a lot of Chaney's problem would be his play callers, or just how much of a struggle is there between him and Brett Bielema as far as the differences of what they envision with, you know, for a program and what they're able to do with each other?
Well, that's a great question, and fans should remember there's a headset on the head coach, and the plays are he's hearing what's called, and he's probably inserting his influence, and I really don't believe that Chaney at the goal line would have called this all on his own, the series, the way they called that series against Mississippi State at the 3-yard line. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm in a place where somebody else decided to talk on the phone.
That's okay. Well, anyway, yeah, I mean, I think there are some, and I've sort of likened it to, and it's not a great analogy, but balls and strikes. I mean, to some degree, I mean, I don't always see what the umpire is seeing, and, you know, sometimes I don't necessarily agree with play calling, but there's certainly an art to it, and they're, you know, when they work out, even though the play may seem a little bit odd, you know, great. If, like, you know, even against the lesser opponent that you were going to beat anyway against UAB, the failed punt, or the fake field goal, rather, doesn't go well. You're going, what are you guys doing? I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. It's kind of silly
sure
to sit here and second guess, but I mean, I think we've all scratched our heads a little bit with him in the last couple of years. But I think for the most part, like you said, I mean, if you got the guys to execute the plays, they can execute them. I mean, on paper, they always work.
I don't think I ever had really a head scratching moment with Petrino, and think about how many times he succeeded with fourth and short calls that he threw away the book and said, I'm just going to go ahead and go for the home run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they beat LSU his first year here.
Yeah, they beat him at halftime.
One.
Yeah, they beat him at halftime when they threw that touchdown pass when most people would take a knee.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the game his first year
yeah.
with Casey Dick. That was a 4th-and-1 play. You're thinking, do you just get the first down, keep running the clock? No, he just said, hey, I'm scoring now. They're going to have me in man-to-man. I'm throwing the fade route.
Yeah.
Well, you don't really have the capability of throwing a good fade route right now. I mean, I hate to be blunt, but it's true. It's up there on paper. But personnel decisions, all those kind of things all enter into it. And he said he wants Kendrick Edwards out there more. I'd have had him out there on first down against Mississippi State for the fade route, not Demetrius Wilson. I wouldn't have had Hunter Henry on the sidelines. After he's caught, I don't care if he might be a little winded. We got 20 seconds left. Have him out there and throw him the football, you know, in the end zone. Not not a fade route to a guy who's dropped footballs and is not necessarily your go-to receiver. You go to your go-to guy, not to an afterthought. It's just like you don't have me on the show when you have a chance to have Bill Belichick. You know, go be your go-to.
Well, at least you believe in meteorology, so there's that. You got one advantage over Bill.
There you go.
All right, Jim, we got to run. I appreciate the time.
Justin, thanks a lot. We'll see you.
All right. We'll see what happens this weekend in Fayetteville. And Jim is much more optimistic than Harry King. Those are two guys whose opinions I respect, which tells me everything I need to know about this weekend. It could be real interesting in the final moments once again. Coming up, we're working on something. I'm not sure if we're going to pull it off, but we'll see. Stay tuned.
Good luck on that.
Big week in Fayetteville, big week in Arkadelphia. There's your tease.
Yeah, no, it's always big week in Arkadelphia, man. Come on, buddy.
Not every week.
Yeah, it is.
It is this week.
It's like Arkadelphia, Vegas down there, my man. It's craziness. All those crazy kids running around, working up an appetite, burning all those calories. Well, good news. Wendy's bacon portobello melt, juicy cheeseburger topped with rich portobello mushrooms, the only way to go, and a melty cheddar sauce, crisp applewood smoked bacon. The meltiness you know you deserve, all served up on a toasted brioche bun. You get the delicious ingredient combinations, irresistible taste, and the Wendy's promise. Good news, you can make it a combo. Natural cut sea salt fries and a drink power you through the day. You get the power meal, bacon portobello melt. You can also get an apple pecan salad, barbecue ranch chicken salad, Asiago ranch chicken sandwich. You get plenty of options. But you know the one that's going to power you through the day is the bacon portobello melt. We'll be back. This is The Zone. Buzz Radio Networks.